The I have the OARs in front of me, and it says they were adopted in or effective in April of 2010. And I think he corrected himself at that meeting that you were at.
Other conversation. We'll have time as well at the end.
So what would happen if we don't accept this procurement report?
Well, we wouldn't proceed with a contract. There are two dates that are in the contract, both 60 days. One is a guaranteed price, so after June 6th, they don't have to honor their bid. And the other one is the potential for a delay claim. And Christine might be better qualified to answer that than I.
Well, I think from the bidding standpoint, there is the guarantee of price from the contractor, and that does expire on June 6th. And so at that point, we would need to, you know, go back to the contractor and ask them to hold their prices.
But we don't actually have to accept it today. We could delay till next week if we wanted to, without consequence.
David, you're missing the LT2 requirement. You have to speak to it.
I thought the question was related to the contract.
No question here is related to just the contract.
In addition to the contract issue, we will also be out of compliance with our schedule. And I believe that date is June 1. So we would be in technical violation of the agreed upon schedule, and presumably the state, and we would have to notify the state that we didn't meet this milestone, and the state would then presumably take some sort of enforcement action.
But we need to do it by June 1, not today, May 25th. May 25th? So we could do it next week. Theoretically.
Presumably.
Without consequences.
Theoretically. I think that's true.
Thank you. Oh, and I have a question about the specifics in the contract. Question has been raised to me in emails about the caretaker's house costing $460,000. That seems a lot for a caretaker's house.
Well, that was actually all the bids were pretty close on the caretaker's house, and it was pretty close to what we were originally anticipating.
What are we buying for $460,000?
Just that, a house.
A really nice house. How about what are we buying for the...
I think that's uncalled for. If you want to ask questions that are professional and have answers, I appreciate that. But questioning the impunity or impugning the Bureau's integrity or anybody else is uncalled for. And that's playing to the audience, so please.
I don't comment on your behavior, and I'd appreciate this similar courtesy. Why is the Interpretive Center costing the ratepayers $490,000?
The Interpretive Center is part of the master plan that was required of us, and that is the bid that came in. There were we estimated a different amount. That is the overall bid from the successful bidder. As part of the package.
What am I proposing to buy for $490,000? What's in with that?
I can come and bring to you the work that the Water Bureau has been doing with the community for the past probably 2 years on the park improvements. There are $13 million worth of park improvements in this particular bid.
Yeah, that would be very helpful.
There has been a lot of work on this and a lot of community engagement and a lot of people in the community who are very, very excited about the work. But as I said, it's about $13 million worth of that $80 million is on park improvements and buildings. So the maintenance building, the caretaker's house, the storage building in the yard, the restroom remodel, the parking lot improvements, the trail improvements, all of those things add up to $13 million. And there has been, and if you were to go to our website, you'd actually be able to find most of that information on the project and on the, at least the exterior look of the various buildings. They haven't been designed.
When the Environmental Services brings a big contract, they usually come and brief me and give me all that detail ahead of time rather than expecting me to go to the website. So it's a little disconcerting to be asked to approve a bid for $80 million without having that breakdown, but perhaps we can have that discussion after testimony.
Other council discussion? I'd like to get to public testimony as quickly as we can. All right, we will have time for more public testimony, and I've got some questions, probably follow-up for you and the lawyers, but to not keep people waiting, how many do we have signed up?
14.
Okay. We'll call them in order that folks signed up.
The first three, please come on up, are Darvell Lloyd, Tom Keenan, and Marcus Chase. They'll be followed by Tom Fahey, Ted Whitehead, and Jane Malarkey Harmon.
Mr. Lloyd, would you like to begin? The rules of testimony are your first and last name. We do not want your address. We do not want your phone number. If you are authorized to speak on behalf of a nonprofit, a for-profit, any kind of other government, you need to disclose that as part of your introduction, and we're glad you're here. Mr. Lloyd.
Good afternoon, Mayor Adams and City Commissioners. My name is Darvell Lloyd, and I volunteer, represent Impact Northwest, also volunteer with the Friends of Mont Tabor Park. And these comments were written down before your vote this morning, but we very much appreciate your commitment to pursue all kinds of other avenues besides the covering of the reservoirs. The City Council must, we feel, direct the Water Bureau eventually to renegotiate the reservoir compliance schedule. Pushing out compliance for the Tabor reservoirs until something like 2025. The reservoir compliance schedule can be renegotiated for any reason. Nothing in the law specifies or requires that there should be a technical justification for a longer compliance schedule. In recent years, the costly enhanced security and deferred maintenance projects have been undertaken at Portland's open reservoirs. Good governance says that ratepayers should reap the benefits of the projects they have financed. So this really is about good governance. A consulting firm hired by the Water Bureau studied the open reservoirs under a 9-year contract from 1995 to 2004. In a 2001 document, that firm rated the reservoirs as being in good condition and listed projects that, if completed over a 20-year period, would maintain the safe function of reservoirs until 2050, if that work started in 2003. The majority of the recommended projects were completed under 4 contracts between 2003 and 2011 at a cost of $45 million. One of the upgrade contracts, a $23 million construction contract, was awarded in 2007. 1 year after this EPA LT rule was finalized, and it ran until March of this year. Ratepayers' water bills will reflect these costs over the next 25 years. Do I have to wrap up now?
You have 27 seconds.
Okay. So please make it a priority to remove all unnecessary LT2 mandated construction projects from this budget, reduce the rate increase for the benefit of all people, and pursue alternative compliance for the open reservoirs, beginning with renegotiating the compliance schedule. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Lloyd. Hi.
Hi. Tom Keenan, President of Portland Bottling, also representing the Central Eastside Industrial Council. 15,000 employees, 1,200 businesses. Number one, water usage has been declining. The Water Bureau's statistics show that. Number two, Saddle's building a same basic size reservoir containment system for $30 million less than we are. Number three, the Water Bureau continually overestimates. rates are based on that. And then when they come in under, as Commissioner Leonard said, I didn't see rates go down. Number four, respectfully to Commissioner Leonard, you don't ask the state if you can. You follow the statutes, and you look at the law, and which does allow the variance. It's kind of like asking the piranhas if you can swim in the river. We need to stop it until we've exhausted all the legal avenues available to us. Businesses are overwhelmed by utility costs, and no more should be spent on LT2. Logic dictates that with the new information and a new primary decider, the state of Oregon, that we stand a very good chance of taking care of Portland's beleaguered water payers. Your constituents deserve to have this tabled now. We can win this. We will win this if we go for it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Next, we are Tom Fahey, Ted Whitehead, and Jane Malarkey Harmon. And they'll be followed by Rose Marie Opp, Cherry Lambert Holenstein, and Stephen Marks.
Good afternoon. Thanks for your patience. We appreciate it. Would you like to begin?
My name is Jane Malarkey Harmon. I've been to City Council many times regarding issues around concerning our Bull Run water and our water quality and the Water Bureau. Today I'm here to ask that the City Council delay any action on the Powell Butte project as part of the LT2. I urge you to have public hearings and work groups for everyone to be involved and to listen to how these decisions are made. The idea of spending what sounds to me like close to $1 million on two structures that have nothing to do with our water quality, and then at the same time have these enormous increases in water rates, just doesn't make sense. This is not something that's in the best interests of our citizens. And I have to say, after listening to some of the answers to some of the questions that were asked by the commissioners, with respect to all city employees, I don't understand how a project can be justified by people being excited about it or working hard on it. That, to me, does not justify spending taxpayer dollars. Thank you.
Thank you, Jane. Hi, welcome.
Ted Whitehead with Yoke Cream International. Mr. Mayor and City Commissioners, once again, we want to take this opportunity to request that the city seek any and all available variance options to LT2 projects and cease any additional expenditures toward these projects until those options are exhausted and variances are granted. We make this request on two points. First, with respect to a tangible need, the targeted testing of Bull Run sources in the reservoirs has not returned any evidence that these projects will have any positive impact on the purity or safety of Portland's drinking water. Second, with respect to a competitive business environment, Portland's water and sewer costs are already higher than most of the rest of the nation, and we need to keep utility rates down in order to keep Portland a competitive and attractive place for businesses and employers. Now that the EPA has delegated primacy for implementation of LT2 to the state of Oregon, the city has additional options and should follow whatever means are necessary to seek variances from both reservoir burial mandates and additional water treatment. Therefore, we urge you to vote in a manner that would support postponement of LT2 while additional variance options are pursued, and that would curb any proposed rate increases currently related to these projects. Thank you for consideration of this very important issue to the City of Portland, its citizens, and its businesses.
Sir, I just have a question for you, because you've been at this for a while, and it would just be helpful to understand something. Other than LT2, which you've highlighted in your testimony, is there any other driver behind the proposed increases over the next 5 years in the Water Bureau rates that you object to?
Personally, I'm not.
On behalf of your company.
On behalf of my company, we have not been at this very long, and it was a question of ours: what are the other driving factors behind the other 60% of the rate increases that are non-LT2 of the 85%? So that is a question of us as well. We do not specifically have other objections, but we have not been involved enough to know what those other drivers are to know if there are any specifics that we would have a statement against.
Hi, welcome.
Tom Fahey with Siltronic Corporation. And we're the largest commercial water user. I believe our rates are somewhere around 5% of the Bureau's revenue. We've been at this for a while, too. I was here last week, and we were in the meeting that the mayor convened with the attorneys. We appreciate that. We feel it was a good dialogue also. And we do believe that the lawyers have laid out a clear alternative path for the city to pursue. And we would like you to pursue every avenue possible before going ahead with construction. This, we think, is a prudent use of the money that we pay to the city for the water that we use. I know it's tempting to negotiate a discount on the construction like you have, and then feel like, well, let's stop the construction, and then we lose that discount. But we've all, I think, seen in our own personal lives that just because you buy something on sale, if that's not something you really need, it's still a waste of money. And so that is what we feel is going on here. We really think you should be absolutely sure this is necessary and not just go forward because we're potentially saving some money on construction costs. Along with that, of course, Mayor, you're wearing your job spin. We appreciate that, and we think that's very important. I know you've heard from a lot of other companies about the job side of this. The construction aspect is, of course, going to provide some jobs, but as I mentioned last week, those are temporary jobs, oftentimes going to out-of-state companies. When we heard the list of contractors you're using, several had out-of-state addresses attached to them. I think it just makes my point that I made last week. And all of these companies that you have coming up here, all these ratepayers, all are providing jobs to Portlanders. So as I mentioned, or as I asked you last week, I had a question for you. I said, how is this helping the traded sector companies compete? And you didn't have an answer for me, and it's okay. I understand it was a rhetorical question. We know this isn't helping. But I believe, as the Oregonian said, that the question today is really one about courage, about your courage to vote for the ratepayers of the city. And it's a simple question, and I think in this case it's a very clear question, and it only has a yes or no answer. And we hope that you vote in favor of the ratepayers of the city and stop construction. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony.
The next three are Rosemary Opp, Cherry Lambert-Holenstein, and Stephen Marks. And they will be followed by Linda Bauer, Floyd Jones, and Kent Crayford.
Welcome. Thanks for waiting. Would you like to please go first?
Okay. This testimony will be as an individual here. I'll start out by saying the LT rule, we pretty much know now, was based on politics and not science.
I apologize. I need you to say your name for
Rosemary Opp.
Thank you, Rosemary.
I was earlier. Sorry. Hundreds of EPA officials have said that they were politically interfered with. I have all the links here, which I'll put in the record. EPA official has stated that they're reluctant to fine municipalities. The New York Times article, September 13th, 2009, has stated EPA does not intervene in polluted water systems. So now, Congress and the President are forcing EPA to postpone needed rules. Surely, our council and our congressional delegation can now ask EPA for a waiver from an unneeded rule. This political climate is in our favor. This just happened this last month, I believe. January, President Obama grabbed headlines with an op-ed in Wall Street Journal promising to reduce regulatory burdens on business, followed up then with an executive order calling on federal agencies to make sure that future regulations impose the least possible burden and to review existing regulations with an eye to weeding out those that are outmoded, ineffective, insufficient, or excessively burdensome. So, since that political climate is in our favor, we really are asking our city council to be in our favor as well. In sum, I'm hearing that as far as this LT2 rule, you need to notify the state for delay. So you really don't need to vote on this Powell Butte expenditure. No matter what Commissioner Leonard is saying about planning from 1995, maybe those folks already knew that they were going to be heading out for the LT2 rule. I don't know, but $80 million is a lot of money, and I'm not so sure that we're going to need extra storage. My own personal feeling on this is a lot of people will probably be moving out. Businesses could be moving out with high water rates, so we're using less water, so I really don't think we should go forward with this Powell Butte storage tank right now. The Water Bureau, they just seem to be on a race. They want to close up this bid. We know that they can simply notify the state now to ask for a deadline, for a waiver from that deadline. And as I mentioned before, and I think the citizens listening on cable need to know that we are talking $1 billion here for a public health problem that doesn't exist, and that our Water Bureau is already in huge debt. We really should not even ask any more debt here, and we should be seriously asking for a legislative exemption, a waiver from this EPA LT2 rule, and I will be submitting a letter from the Mill Park Neighborhood Association into the record. That's another matter, but thank you. My time has run out.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Hi, welcome.
Hi. Chair Lambert Holenstein. Once again, I'm here like almost everybody else is, and we're concerned what's happening with our Water Bureau. And I'm here to ask you to postpone all compliance with LT2 and do not go ahead any further with Powell Butte. I walk up there frequently. I was up there a month ago, and I saw the caretaker's house there. And this morning, I saw a picture of the new caretaker's house that will be built. And my first question with my little sarcasm was, does the guy have a mate? I mean, it's a very attractive house anyway. And why in the world we ever need to build a house like that for the caretaker is beyond me. At the teleconference or phone conference last week, attorney from Reed Smith, David Wagner, I believe his name was, said, if public health is protected, reasonable minds would prevail. And I think all here agree that public health is protected. We have one of the most wonderful water systems that there is, and we do not need to comply with the EPA. And government should not harm the people. Government should protect the people. And maybe you need to adopt the slogan of Nike, you know, just do it and work for a waiver. Thank you.
Thank you. Hello, sir. Thanks for waiting.
You're welcome. My name is Stephen Marks. My company is Portland Historic Properties. I'm also a member of the Oregon State Bar. But I'm here speaking on behalf of my approximately 50 tenants. And I want to remind you or maybe educate you about something I'm very familiar with, and that is that when you own and provide rental housing to people, good quality rental housing, non-government affected, private sector housing, your number one operating expense is the payment of municipal taxes. But your number two operating expense is now payment to the Water and Sewer Bureau. And as those expenses continue to go up, it directly affects the affordability of housing in this city. And every time you come to the ratepayers and ask for more and more and more, on one hand, you spend money to promote affordable housing, but with each action you take, like this proposed action, you are making housing less affordable for the many thousands of people who you don't see in your budget requests, those of us that are not involved in government. But I want you to remember when you vote on this that if you vote for it, everyone who doesn't seek your help but pays water rates through increased rents will be affected, and housing will become less and less affordable in this city. And that should be a major concern to everyone. The second point I wanted to make is, because I'm a member of the bar, because I'm a historian novice, I want to remind you of the importance as a political strategy of the idea of civil disobedience. But after the break this morning, I heard Mayor Adams speaking to the press, and I think to some extent I'm singing to the choir here, because I think that the panel knows that these actions now are not a good idea. But perhaps with your exception, sir, but the majority of the board, I think, realizes that this is not the right time to do this contract. But if it should come to pass that we don't get the variance we seek, civil disobedience is a viable political strategy. In this era of media, it focuses attention like a laser beam, and I think this woman was quite correct when she said, I'm almost done, that we have a very favorable political climate in Washington. I think we should use it to the best of our ability.
Thank you, Mr. Marks. Thank you all. Oh, hi, Sue.
Hello, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
The next three speakers are Linda Bauer, Floyd Jones, and Kent Crayford. They'll be followed by, Theodora Tsongas, Nancy Newell, and Regna Merritt.
Ms. Bauer, hi, how are you?
Hello, Linda Bauer. I got these pictures of the buildings that are shown on the bid off of the Palview website, just as Mr. Schaff said. But I got these figures off your council agenda because I couldn't find them on the website. So I put the figures and the buildings together, and I, as Commissioner Fritz, cannot understand why things are so expensive in this bid. And I would please like to get the same figures as the commissioner, because I just don't understand why all of these buildings are so outrageously expensive.
May I ask a question? You obviously were involved in the process, have been involved all along. So Director Schaff did speak to the community benefits and the input that the neighborhood has had in terms of wanting some amenities. Could you speak to what kinds of things you were expecting?
There was a citizen advisory committee formed, and that committee looked at the design concepts. They never, ever talked price. So, yes, the committee actually, I think, took a vote at the end to endorse these design concepts. But that's why I would like to see the prices, as would you, because...
And can you tell me the kinds of things that you, with the Director Schaff, said the $13 million, what kinds of elements are included in addition to the house and the shell and the interpretive center? What other community benefits was the community looking for?
The advisory committee talked about trail improvements, the interpretive center, the new parking lot, the caretaker's house, and the maintenance yard were the improvements that the hearings officer required.
Thank you.
So I just have to say, Linda, I'm disappointed in what you're saying. The community didn't look at drawings that were made and say they're okay. The community was intimately involved in creating what you're looking at. At one point in the process, I suggested that the existing caretaker's house, which is a modular home that was put up there recently, be the caretaker's house and not build the house that you're now objecting to. And I was told that it was promised to the community, through the community and through our outreach folks, that they adamantly wanted the house built that you're looking at now and not the caretaker's house that is there. So I feel a little bit like, again, this isn't being explained fully to people listening, that it sounds like the Water Bureau on its own designed a bunch of buildings in the building, and the community said, okay, nothing could be further from the truth. They've been intimately involved in each stage of the development of the amenities as they progressed and have approved each one as they've been designed.
The hearings officer required that there be a new caretaker's house. The hearings officer required that there be a new interpretive center. The hearings officer required that there be a maintenance yard. The community did not want a maintenance yard up on a nature park, but the hearings officer required it. So then the Water Bureau convened a CAC, and we looked at all of the concepts, but there were no prices connected. We didn't know that the city was going to propose to spend $2 million to build a maintenance yard. So I'm sorry if I disappointed you.
Okay. Ms. Jones.
Yes, a lot of my comments I made this morning, but I just wanted to stress, as the Oregonian reported in the articles over the last several months, they stated that EPA was wondering why Portland would complain about this rule now, because the Portland Water Bureau was heavily involved in development of the rule, and that's the fact. Under a 5-year contract, we hired a consultant, the one whose pockets are being lined now on all of these contracts, to negotiate this very bad rule. EPA, City of Portland, Portland Water Bureau, no one can point to a single city in this nation that's benefiting from this regulation.
I'm going to give you more time,
okay.
just so that if I could interrupt your flow before you move to the next question. I'm trying to understand, and people use different words to mean the same thing and the same words to mean different things. These questions are just about clarity of trying to understand what you're saying, not to be argumentative. When you say the EPA rule, are you talking about the EPA rule or the state rule?
Well, the rule is the rule. The EPA LT2 rule is
uncovering reservoirs.
The EPA rule that requires that we treat or cover to address the reservoir issue, and that we treat the source water to address the same issue, the Cryptosporidium giardiin viruses.
You're saying that, so the rulemaking at the federal level,
yes,
and the state level, or just the federal level?
Well, the rule was made at the federal level.
That's what I thought. So you're saying that the rule made at the federal level was made by the city or by a city consultant?
No, I'm saying that the Portland Water Bureau hired a consultant to participate in the rulemaking process, the very same consultant who's with global corporations who now, both in Portland and across the nation, are profiting from this rule, which isn't providing any measurable public health benefit anywhere.
Sure, I know that part. I'm just trying to get the rulemaking piece down.
Okay.
So just if you could,
The rulemaking was made in Washington, D.C.
What was the firm?
Joe Glicker, a former Water Bureau employee.
Okay. What was the firm?
He was with Montgomery Watson Harza Global. Now he's with CH2M Hill.
Okay. So your point is that the industry made the rule that's requiring us to do LT2.
They participated in the rulemaking process, yes.
Okay. And when we, okay, I'm going to let you go. So next point you want to make? So now I understand that.
Well, okay, so now, you know, I want to say that laws trump regulations. So the Safe Drinking Water Act does provide for a variance. We went to the legislature, as David Schaff mentioned, in 2007 to make sure that Oregon state law was in line with the federal regulation. Then last year, that was the dirty trick. Somehow they made some change to Oregon regulations. That can be addressed. We can either go to the governor's office and ask them to strike it, or we can go various routes to address that. But simply sending a letter now to the state and asking them to tell us, you know, what data we must collect or what course we could go through to get a variance isn't going to get us anywhere.
So again, in the effort to be clear, over the years you've told me that we could get a variance on the federal level for different provisions, including the covering issue. And I have lobbied personally on either, I use the words inartfully, waiver or variance on both aspects of the LT2 issue. I sat in a meeting that was one of the most uncomfortable meetings of my political career. Actually, it was a whole day full of meetings where Commissioner Leonard, in the most skillful way, shellacked various bureaucrats and elected officials, and I thought security was going to escort us out, but he has, I'm going to give you more time, so you don't have to worry about the time. So I've been part of the lobbying for regulatory relief. I've seen I haven't been party to everything, but I've seen Commissioner Leonard ask for it. My understanding was, so I want to trade notes with you, is the reason we started with a letter is that we didn't know, part of it was, we didn't know how to begin to ask for a variance at the federal level because the process was not often used, and we wanted to make sure that we were investing in the right kind of variance data so we could support a variance, and that's why the letter was made. Now, when the letter came back and said, don't bother, I'd been party to a bunch of efforts. And then, yes, last week, the firm, and I really appreciate the water users making the firm available for the discussion. This is very complex. I'm really all trying to understand it. They concurred that a variance was, regardless of going to the state, they concurred that a variance at the federal level was not possible for the covering issue. And I'm going to let Ken talk to why I misinterpreted that or not. So You've said over the years that a variance at the federal level was possible, and I thought you were involved in, and I'm going to ask more tough questions of the Bureau, and you've been involved in selecting the lawyer that we took the EPA to federal court. What happened? Why didn't we succeed at the federal level, in your opinion?
Well, I believe you're wrong on what the Reed firm said. They said EPA chose to use their discretion, and in the comments that New York submitted on new regulatory reform last month, or in March of this year, as they say, EPA refused to exercise the discretion afforded by a variance provision in the Safe Drinking Water Act. So EPA chose to use their discretion. And
okay.
I think a big factor in all of this is, the schedule for covering the reservoirs was negotiated with the EPA by the Water Bureau behind closed doors. It is no secret to anyone. If the only thing you did was look at, since 1995, the series of contracts, whether you're looking at the Infrastructure Master Plan or the 9-year Powell Butte Plan or the 9-year Reservoir Study Plan or the 5-year Regional Transmission, it's no secret the Water Bureau wants to build treatment plants and buried tanks. So part of the problem is they negotiated behind closed doors, told EPA, we want to bury our reservoirs, and this is the schedule we're giving to you, and you make us stick to it.
I see.
And so now, with the state, you know, we're going to have to address the regulation.
I'm going to give you a chance to talk about the state. So the you're not arguing that the EPA said no and that they said no.
you're saying that they exercise their discretion to say no. They could have said yes, is what your point is,
yes.
I think, right?
That's okay. Right.
So now I appreciate that clarification.
Well, Mayor, can I just, on that point?
Yep.
So could, just so I'm clear, could you tell me all the cities that have been successful in getting the EPA to exercise that discretion?
Well,
just name the cities for me.
Well,
so I
New York has written before us,
York,
18 months.
New York has got a delay in building. I'm asking for cities that have successfully received the variance under federal law.
Well, no one else has applied yet. No one else has applied. They're looking to Portland. That's been discussed all along. Baker City is very interested in a source water. They don't have open reservoirs. They're very interested in a source water variance. They don't have the money. They cannot raise rates like the Portland Water Bureau has done.
I appreciate your advocacy, but all of us have questions that have answers. And you're going to have all the time you want to make your point. But there are some facts that I need to know as I'm weighing the information. And so just so we're clear, no city has been successful in getting the EPA to exercise its discretion to give them a variance on this rule. Is that correct?
Other than New York, I don't know anyone who's applied.
But you say other than New York, and I just want to be clear about this. What Kent Crayford told me about New York is that they've been able to negotiate a longer period of time to comply, not that they have successfully obtained a variance. Is that correct?
Well, that's correct, yes.
Okay, that was my question.
So, and then, of course, I'm alarmed to hear, and I appreciate your patience in letting us sort of break it down a little bit, but you have been at this for so long, and you deserve this extra time. It's alarming for me to hear that we were somehow some sort of backdoor, some backdoor agreement to the disadvantage of ratepayers simply because the Bureau was motivated to some inside agreement that the Bureau, you say, was asked the EPA to say no because the Water Bureau wanted covered reservoirs. What kind of evidence do you have for that?
I wasn't in the backdoor meeting, even though I asked to be. All of us who had been working on this for a decade, when it came to the point where we were going to negotiate the schedule for compliance, first of all, there was no public process. The 2004 reservoir panel clearly said if we weren't able to meet a mitigation option, there would be a meaningful public process. As much as we weren't all thrilled with the reservoir panel process, there were 13 members sitting there, and you were able to present volumes of material and have a public discussion. It spelled out what should happen. So that never happened. The rule requires that we treat or cover to address contaminants that don't exist. We didn't have to put together a fast-track burial plan. So we found out about it because we attended a regional manager's meeting and heard them discussing ownership of Powell Butte 2. And we're thinking, Powell Butte 2, what are you talking about? We found out through that the next week they were going to have a meeting with the EPA. We asked to be invited. We told we were not invited and we weren't going to be there. So was I sitting there to hear the discussion? But do I know fully based on 10,000 hours of looking at Water Bureau documents and their interest in burying tanks and building treatment plants that they are fully committed to doing that, whether we need them or not? Yes, I know that. Do we need Powell Butte 2? You asked that for other reasons. But no, we don't.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate the concerns, and I've asked you to air them out here, and you did, and thank you. Is there any in you combing through all the documentation is if you could provide me with the documentation of, and I mean this sincerely, documentation where the Water Bureau or the city in some way asked the EPA to tell us to bury to do the first part of LT2 regarding covered or buried reservoirs, I would very much appreciate that.
Well, the rule requires that you treat or cover to address these contaminants.
No, I'm just talking about the part where you said earlier that the Bureau basically asked the EPA to impose these regulations on us. That's
no, that obvious. Isn't. Well, I want to be clear about that. That isn't what I said. I said is okay. In negotiating this schedule, which they brought to you on the day they were submitting it to EPA in 2009, they didn't bring you a treatment option. They didn't bring you alternatives for treating at the outlet or an extended compliance schedule. They brought you the schedule, which was negotiated behind closed doors. And then since then, what we've heard them say is there are no options for delaying this. Well, there is no deadline in the rule for complying with the reservoir requirement. None. Zero. No deadline whatsoever. That was a schedule put together by the Water Bureau. And then they say, oh, now we have to have a technical reason for moving that schedule out. There's no basis in law for that. No technical reason is required. Do you think the EPA doesn't want to defend their rule that isn't provided any public health benefit? Of course they do.
And as you, and I'll finish here in a minute, as we look to the state, I want to give you time to finish your remarks about what you think the opportunities are as this sort of pivots to the state. I appreciate you answering my questions and the commissioner's questions about the federal process thus far, and I promise, give Commissioner Lydon an opportunity.
Well, I just want to respond to this point because Floyd's right. She was not invited to the meeting by me with the EPA to discuss the schedule, and I want to explain why. I told Floyd at the time why, and I want to make sure, since she's raised this, why that happened. Floyd was intimately involved in a number of decisions that were made, including hiring the law firm that challenged this rule in court. She was involved in a number of meetings with me and other officials locally, but at a key meeting where the EPA administrator from Seattle agreed to come to Portland to discuss the various options that were available to us, the tenor and tone that was used at the meeting became so counterproductive that I felt like it was no longer in our best interest to have Floyd.
That is wholly inaccurate. You're impugning my integrity.
I'll give you a chance to respond, but he let you speak.
And it happened at the Budget Committee as well. And so we had to make changes, not so that people wouldn't be there that disagreed, but that they be done civilly, people be allowed to finish what they were saying without being cut off, and that people's integrity not be questioned. So as we have moved through this process, I have tried as hard as I can to keep as many people at the table as possible, but with a minimum degree of decorum required.
Well, that's wholly inaccurate. That's all I can say. There are several people sitting here who were in attendance. The EPA representative at the meeting that Commissioner Leonard is referring to had never read the rule. They didn't know. So I am not going to not explain what I've studied for years. So
I have one question
anyway.
And Ms. Jones, I'm going to ask you the same question I asked someone earlier, which is, let's take the proposed 85% rate increase, and I got to break this out because I think we're conflating a lot. Every time we have this hearing, we conflate lots of issues, and I just want to make sure I'm tracking. So if we get the variance on treatment and don't have to build this UV facility, which will take 10%, up to 10% off the 80% out, and if we are successful on a variance as to the other component of LT2, we get down to about 60% of the 85% increase. Do you have any objections to any component of the 60% driver of the rate increase?
Yes, many components.
Well, that's part of what we're trying to do here is build a record on that. And I sense Kent's frustration a little bit because he comes in and talks about rate increases. Others come in here and talk about reservoirs. They may or may not be part of the same package. Some of your members, Kent, call me and say they want some reductions, but they actually agree with the Oregonian that we should bury the reservoir. So we've got a lot of different voices here, and we're trying to get to the right outcome. And it's helpful to know, apart from the reservoirs, what component of the rate increase that you object to.
Are you asking me to cite specific aspects
of
the Water Bureau budget?
You've done a lot of work on this. What component?
Well, as I stated last week, I don't support the deferred rate increases. I don't believe we should have been hiring during a recession. I don't think we should have been hiring laid-off Bureau of Development Services employees. Water Bureau employees took no leave days when other bureaus did. I didn't come prepared to speak to that. I actually have a document, and I could go through the whole list. I mean, I just think there are many other places where we could make cuts in the Water Bureau budget, maybe not up to 60%, certainly, but there are many other places. So
I'd like to pick your brain as we pivot to the state change, but is there anything else you want to make sure that you have a chance to say up to the discussion then about from here looking at the state process that you haven't been able to
Well, I did give you something in writing, so I was going to speak specifically to Pal Butte, too, but I definitely want to speak to the point of working with the state, because that's most critical.
Could you summarize your thoughts on Pal Butte?
Well, first of all, we don't need additional storage. As the 2004 reservoir panel was told, we currently have an excess of 50 million gallons of storage up at Tabor as it exists now. And anyone who's paid any attention, whether you were up there during the major upgrades between 2007 and the present, when most of the reservoirs were offline, or if you've been up there any time since September, the last 9 months, Reservoir 6, the largest reservoir sitting on 60th, 35 million gallons each cell, has been offline since September. So we have an excess of storage as it is. When Pal Butte 2 is built, we'll have an excess of 100 million gallons. And then regarding the costs, you know, since 2008, the costs have been estimated at $137 million. And if you add up the costs that the Water Bureau have out there now, you know, spending, we've already cut down on the excavation costs from $10 million to $4 million, construction contract, $80 million. If you add all those up, even if they come up to $100 million, you know, you still look at Seattle. We're building a 50-million-gallon tank for $100 million, if that's the cost. They're building, at the same schedule, same time frame, a two-cell, 10-million-gallon larger, 60-million-gallon tank for $57 million with design, construction, and park amenities. And I provided two references in the material here.
So your thoughts on as we pivot to the state?
Well, as we pivot to the state, you can't simply send a letter. We all know what the letter is going to say, you know, that the regulation isn't going to allow for variances. First, I mean, you know, if you're sincere in making an effort, you go in and have some negotiations first. You figure out what the strategy is, how, you know, whether we're going to go to the governor's office or we're going to work on reversing that regulation. Clearly, the law allows it. We already have collected, as I've said, 3/4 of the data already. New York's variance application document, 160 pages, includes all of their source water work. We've already conducted all that work. In a few weeks, we're all going to see this huge document, I presume, that the Water Bureau has put together. You know, so you work in that way. We have support around the state. You know, what more support could you see in the city for this?
Okay. Anything else, Ms. Jones? Thank you. I'm sure, hopefully you feel like you've been given extended time.
Yeah.
I appreciate it.
And thank you for all your work over the many years.
Thank you.
Ms. Crawford.
Good afternoon. I'm Kent Crayford with the Portland Water Users Coalition. And first, I just want to say, you know, having worked with Floy now for nearly 10 years on this issue, I will say I don't think there is anyone as knowledgeable about LT2 as she is. And I think she has correctly assessed what the city's options are, and I'd like to expand upon those. Before I do that, though, I do want to talk about the rates because, as Commissioner Fish said, these get a little confusing. And I do want to mention that, you know, we're talking a lot about the 85% increase, but what about the 100% we're paying now? We talk a lot about how much LT2 makes up the, you know, it's 25% of the 85%, but how much of the 100% we're paying now is it? And what about when you add those up over time? What's more, this 85% is just over the next 5 years. What about years 6, 7, 8, 9, 10? We've asked for those numbers, and Commissioner Fritz actually formally requested those numbers as part of the Water Bureau's budget work session. To date, though, we have gotten no numbers from the Water Bureau as to what the rates are in the out years. I'd like to speak a little bit about what your options are.
May I interrupt? I have actually got those numbers last night, so I'm going to ask Milena to make copies. And
wonderful. Yeah. Okay, thank you.
Yes. Sorry, go ahead. Thank you.
Oh, I'm waiting for my timer to start again.
Most people just talk.
Mr. Crayford, thank you for your testimony.
Yes. So last week, as we mentioned, the mayor convened a meeting with the stakeholders, the attorneys, Reed Smith, that the Portland Water Users had retained, and the city attorneys. I thought it was a very good discussion. What we understand your options are the following. One, you can seek a delay from your current compliance timeline. Number two.
Delay appears to be sort of in keeping with what the Oregonian talked about today, because they did not, it seemed, retreat from their position that burial may be the right option, but they wanted to mitigate the impact of the rate increases on consumers, correct?
That's correct. And there are some who would say that we're not saying never on the reservoirs, we're just saying not now. We're not,
interrupt you, but
our coalition is not one of those. We don't think they're necessary at all, but that's correct, yes.
Okay.
So number one, you can delay the projects and seek a delayed compliance timeline or a modified compliance timeline. Number two, the state is the decision maker on a reservoir variance as well as a treatment variance, but there is a speed bump there that needs to be addressed with this regulation. Specifically, the state regulation prohibits a reservoir variance. That is fortunately, however, that is inconsistent with the state law. The state law is broad. The state adopted the federal regulation, the Federal Safe Drinking Water Act provisions for variances. So a variance option is available to the city. The state could grant you a variance, but the state needs to fix their regulation. That can be done administratively. So if we were to pursue Commissioner Leonard's suggestion to simply send a letter, well, the state's just going to send a letter back and say there is no reservoir variance because our regulation prohibits it.
In your opinion, how did that speed bump get into the law?
We don't know. And we actually had that. The mayor asked that question last week of the city attorneys and the Water Bureau. When did we know about this regulation being promulgated? When were the hearings? Were we notified? Was the city involved? We don't know the answers to those questions yet.
Are those the only two options, or do you have a?
No. Well, simply, we can delay. We can't seek a variance. And then the third is that given that you can delay your compliance timeline, you can't seek a variance, you can also stop these projects. And so that's what we're asking for today. We would like you to see you vote no on accepting this report, or at the very least table this issue until the city can complete a formal application for a variance from the reservoir mandates.
Discussion with Mr. Crawford.
Crawford, thank you. It's all right.
All right, thank you very much for your testimony. How many more people are signed up?
I have three more. That would be Theodora Songas, Nancy Newell, and Regna Merritt. Go ahead.
Hi, thanks for your patience today. Appreciate it. Glad you're here. Who would like to begin?
I will.
Okay.
Good afternoon. I'm Dr. Theodora Songas, and I'm testifying as a senior taxpaying member of the Portland community. I really think that the true costs of complying with LD2, treating and burying the reservoirs, have not been systematically considered. We have to consider what Portland will lose, and that includes loss of income, loss of jobs, loss of businesses, loss of community diversity, loss of faith in city government, loss of true assets, loss of ecosystem services, and those are the natural systems that keep our water clean.
Dr. Theodore, I apologize, if you could pause for a minute, and I'll let you start again. But I have to have a quorum in order to hear your testimony. So I'm going to use this as an excuse to take a 10-minute compassion break. We'll pick up with you when we come back. Bathrooms are on either side of the auditorium.
I believe that they also see the budget.